All right, we're going to talk about the spinal cord now, the other structure of the central nervous system. Folks, you can do this. See what I have my little comment down there? Reach for the greatness. I know it's so much information, but it is so doable. It's been proven, okay? You can do it. The objectives are all in the handout for you. I want you to understand spinal cords. I want you to understand them in such a way that when you come back, when I come back in 4 months to teach you about spinal cord injuries, that you know what's going on, okay? That's my objective. The learning steps follow the handout. So first of all, some general information about the spinal cord. It is a continuation of the neurotissue of the brain. Remember I said the two of them are not glued together? They are a continuation. There are neurons that have cell bodies down in the spinal cord where the axons go up the spinal cord and into the brain. There are neurons that have their cell bodies in the brain and the axons come down the spinal cord. It's all continued together. Where you see the difference between brain and spinal cord is at the level of the foramen magnum, which is that hole at the base of the skull. That's where the medulla oblongata ends and the spinal cord begins. And actually, structurally, you do see a difference. If you dissected it and looked at it under the microscope, you do see a definite differentiation between the tissue of the medulla and of the spinal cord. But it's really how it's organized. It's all neurons with neuroglia. And this is still central nervous system, so we still got the same type of neuroglia, but it's just organized different. The spinal cord lies from that C1 vertebrae all the way down, not to the sacrum, but to L2. A lot of you probably knew that just from doing spinal taps and such, but it doesn't go the whole length of the vertebral canal. It stops at about the level of L2 in the adult. And from there, you do have neurotissue in the rest of the vertebral column going down, but it's not spinal cord neurotissue. It's peripheral nerves. You have all these peripheral nerves coming off of the spinal cord. How many pairs?
31.
31. Up in the level of the cervical region, they come off and they leave. They exit pretty much right where they come off the spinal cord. They exit the vertebral bones. Once you get down into the thoracic, lower thoracic and lumbar region, they come off the spinal cord and they have to descend a little bit to get to their exit, where they exit the vertebral canal. Once you get to L2, you have a bunch coming off that have to really descend to get to their exit. All those nerves in the vertebral canal from L2 down into the sacral region look like a bundle of hairs. Got to use your imagination here, like a horse's tail. And so somebody named it the caudia quina, the end of the horse's tail. That's where caudia quina comes from, and it refers to all those neurons going down. All right, have you heard of the caudia quina before?
Yes.
What's the clinical relationship? Emergency. It's an emergency. Caudia quina syndrome. All right, you'll learn more about that when you get into the spinal cord section of the course. Now the meninges. I don't need to say much here. There's a lot of things written on your handout, but it's the exact same thing we said, or I said, during the brain class. You have 3 layers of meninges. What's the innermost one? The next one out? Next one out? Which one has a webbing or extensions coming off it? Which two have cerebral spinal fluid in between? Arachnoid and the pia. Good. Very, very good. So all that information listed there is stuff you've already had, you learned, and it sounds like, for the most part, you got it in your brain. Well, never mind. I won't get silly. Okay. How about clinically? What can I say about the meninges and the spinal cord? How many of you have ever had an epidural injection? I did. It was great. Yes. Okay. Where do they put that anesthetic? Yeah. But do they go within the meninges? No. They stay exterior to the meninges. There's actually some fat between the dura mater and the vertebral bones. That's where the anesthetic goes. And it depends where they need to give you the anesthesia, what they need to have decrease in sensation as to where they actually supply it. But I had it for my second child, and it was just the most amazing thing. Big difference from first child. How about spinal taps? Do they have to go within the meninges to get a spinal tap?
Yes.
Yeah, because what is a spinal tap? Cerebral spinal fluid. So which meninge do they have to poke through? Dura and arachnoid. All right. How many have had a spinal tap? Oh, we have a healthy class. Okay, spinal taps are used to assess the cerebral spinal fluid to see if there's any bacteria or viruses in it in order to rule out different sorts of diseases. Meningitis, encephalitis being two of them. So just clinically, there's something you need to know about the meninges. All right, 31 pairs of spinal nerves come off of the spine. How many pairs of cranial nerves come off the brain?
12.
31 down in the spine. We're going to name them in just a little bit, so let me move on. Gross anatomy. If we just look at white and gray matter of the spinal cord, there's a whole lot we can name. So why don't we just do that? All right? We're going to name it, and in naming it, we're going to look at the function too. Because just like the brain was so well organized that if you can touch with an electrical probe at one spot, you can make a muscle work, and you know exactly what you're going to have happen. It's so well organized, so is the spinal cord. We have this model here, which has a cross-section of the spinal cord. It shows gray and white matter, and it has numbers all over it, which we don't have the key to anymore. But if you did, you would realize that those numbers refer to certain areas of the spinal cord and what they function in. So one spot within the white matter has neurons, axons specifically, that all have the same kind of function. Maybe it's motor. If it's motor, maybe it's autonomic motor. Meanwhile, if you move just a few millimeters away, you'll get to an area that has all the neurons, the axons of those neurons, that carry the sensation of pain from one particular region of the body, and it can be mapped out, the different regions of the body that carry that sensation of pain just within the few millimeters that you're in. It's highly, highly organized. So we're not going to get to the point of nauseating detail. We're going to talk just basically, what do the different parts of the white and the gray matter functionally do? We're going to start with gray. Now, looking at this picture, you were able to see the hummingbird, right? Not in this picture, but in the brain. Now you're going to be looking for a butterfly. Everyone see a butterfly? All right. Not only is it a butterfly, but it's a horny butterfly. What do I mean by that? Looking at the butterfly from this diagram, this is a stain diagram, you can see that it doesn't look gray anymore because of the type of stain. But the butterfly is gray. Take my word from it. I can go back to the last slide to show you it's gray matter. If it's gray matter, what is it composed mostly of? Bingo, cell bodies. Now, there will be axons coming in to synapse on the dendrites and the cell bodies located in the gray matter, but the gray matter is predominantly cell bodies. It's located centrally. Let's go back to the brain. Where was the gray matter located in the cerebrum? Mostly peripherally, right? There was some central, but mostly it was peripheral. How about in the cerebellum? Mostly peripheral. Now we flip-flopped. Now the gray matter is centrally in that horny, horny butterfly. It's all symmetrical, left to right. It looks the same. And function-wise, it's the same. The only difference is it controls different halves of the body. So function is the same, but it's just going to go to one side of the body or the other, depending on which side it's on. So let's get down to those actual regions themselves. And why I'm keep saying horny, it's because we talk about horns when we talk about the gray matter. There are actually three horns of the gray matter. I'm sure you all can see this. We have a horn here. We have a horn here. And if this were a thoracic section of the spinal cord, we'd have a horn here. Three different horns. So it's a horny butterfly. Now we have to get into directional words. Posterior, dorsal, anterior, ventral. This might drive you nuts. It drives me nuts. But there's two ways to refer to things directional-wise in the body. And with the spinal cord, we can go back and forth. You have the anterior or ventral part of the spinal cord, the AV, and you have the posterior or dorsal part of the spinal cord. Luckily, all you have out here is the lateral. So when we're naming these horns, we're going to use those terms, and I can go back and forth. I'm allowed, and so are you, which means you have to learn how to do that. So you can either use the anterior or posterior references, or you can use the ventral and dorsal references. But you need to know that anterior equals ventral and posterior equals dorsal. And on the homework that you turned in, when I give it back to you, all those terms are listed on there too, okay, for directional sense. So looking at these horns, you have a posterior or dorsal horn. Now I'm coloring it in red right now. You have an anterior or ventral horn. I'll make that blue. And I don't know what this color is. This will be my lateral. It's black, which you probably can't see too well. Actually, it's showing up. All right? Those are your different horns. They function differently. And notice I didn't really get into the middle region too much because I don't know exactly where the boundaries are. All right? So a little fudge room there. But posterior horn functions in sensory. So in that region, you're going to have cell bodies for afferent, for sensory neurons. The anterior horn functions in motor. So you will have cell bodies for motor neurons there. And the lateral horn functions in motor as well, but it's specific for autonomic motor. So that's one of those things you just need to memorize. The different horns, their names, and their functions. Now that lateral horn, the one that's involved in autonomic, you don't find that in the entire spinal cord. Remember, I didn't teach you much about the autonomic nervous system, except for there's parasympathetic and sympathetic. But if I did go into it more, you would understand that only the thoracic lumbar region has sympathetic control. So you'll find that lateral horn in the thoracic lumbar region. And then the parasympathetic comes off of the sacral part of the spinal cord. So the sacral region will have a lateral horn as well. So there will be some cross sections, like the one I have here, that doesn't have a lateral horn, and some that do. If it has it, you know you have autonomic controls there. Any questions about the horny butterfly? Then let's do the white matter. The white matter can be equally divided up into general functions. The white matter surrounds the gray matter, so now we're in the periphery, and it refers to the axons. And since most axons are myelinated, it refers to the myelinated axons. The regions we're going to look at are the posterior dorsal region. Ooh, I don't like black. Do that in red. And remember, it's symmetrical. So actually, we have a left and a right, but they're pretty much identical, except for one goes to one side of the body and one goes to the other. You have a lateral column, and then you have an anterior or ventral column. So what do they do? The posterior column, or dorsal, and one way you can think of that if you're having trouble with the posterior dorsal, think of sharks and the dorsal fin, okay? So that might help you know which way is dorsal, posterior is dorsal. Okay, so that one functions in sensory, all sensory. And it's specific sensory for vibration, proprioception, and discriminative touch. Those three sensations run together. The neurons for them run together. They're going to be different neurons. So it's not like one neuron does all three sensations. Remember, they all have different receptors at the end of their dendrites. But they run together, they track together within the dorsal column. Proprioception, vibration, and discriminative touch. Put those three together in your brain. And they're all posterior column. The lateral column and the anterior column are very, very similar in what they carry. They both carry motor, and they both carry some sensation. The type of sensation that they both carry is the sensation for pain, temperature, and crude touch. So they both have that sensation running through them, tracking up them, grouped together. They both have motor too, but here there's a difference. In the lateral column, it's your somatic motor, your voluntary motor. In the anterior column, it's your autonomic motor, your involuntary. So there's the difference. So you want to highlight that. The motor is different from voluntary to involuntary, somatic to autonomic. Now, if you compare the white matter to the gray matter, you're going to find something doesn't equal up 100%. Because if we try to say lateral column equals lateral horn, it's not. Lateral horn, learn how to spell. It's not going to work. Why not? What kind of motor does the lateral horn have cell bodies for? Autonomic. So make sure you kind of identify that, that the horns do not match up with the columns. They're two separate entities. Now we could really get crazy looking at what all these columns carry. You see, look at this picture. All these different circles there, or ovals, they all have a different function. And we could go crazy naming them. But it's just not going to work for the course and the time that we have. But what I want you to understand is it's so extremely organized. And each sensation runs together with its like neurons. They track together. You're going to hear different terms for this. You're going to hear tracks. You're going to hear funiculus. You're going to hear fununci. You're going to hear lemniscus and peduncles. But thankfully, you'll only hear that if you're in a situation where you're doing a lot of spinal cord injury type work, or if you decide to go on in neuro and learn more. In this class, we're not going to use it. I'm going to refer to them as tracks. All right, but you may see different terms, and if you do any additional reading in other books or on the internet, you will see these other terms. Just know they all mean the same thing. It just means a bunch of neurons with a like function that run together within the spinal cord. All righty, any questions on that white and gray matter? Because now I want to go anatomically a little bit farther out, looking at what happens to form a spinal nerve. The spinal nerve is what comes off of the spinal cord. Okay, so how does that happen? What's going on? If you look at this picture here, I'm going to orient you. Got your spinal cord. You can see that pretty well. Right here is the spinal nerve. So we have something happening, two parts joining up to create a spinal nerve. And that's what we're going to talk about right now. The rest of this, what happens after they join up, we'll talk about that tomorrow when we do the peripheral nerve class. Okay? So hang in there for that one. I know you're all dying to know. Okay, so first of all, two things are coming together to make a spinal nerve. They're called roots. You have a dorsal root, or you can call it posterior root, because dorsal and posterior are interchangeable. And then you have a ventral root, or anterior root. We'll look at the dorsal root first. The dorsal root is made up of afferent neurons. So what is their function? Sensory. You should all be there by now. When I say afferent, you think sensory. All right? Afferent neurons, sensory. These neurons are unipolar. Remember we had all those different diversities, different structures of neurons? There was multipolar, bipolar, and unipolar. Unipolar are the ones that have the stalk, cell body sitting on it, And this stalk has the projection. One's dendrite-like and one is axon-like, but really they're both axons, but we're not going to really worry about that too much. Okay, unipolar neuron, afferent neuron. What I just drew, just look below into the diagram there, and you'll see the same neuron in red, unipolar neuron. And it lies in the dorsal root. The dorsal root is this structure right here between the red lines. This is where the spinal nerve starts. The cell body of that neuron is right in here, making it big. Because all the cell bodies, because it's not just one neuron, it's tons of neurons. Since all the cell bodies lie in that one spot, it swells out that portion of the dorsal root. And that's called the dorsal root ganglion, the swelling of the dorsal root. And the reason it swells is because there's so many cell bodies in there. Cell bodies are big. They take up space. They make the dorsal root bigger at that section. So with the dorsal root, we have two things to name. The dorsal root itself, and then the dorsal root ganglion, the spot where all those cell bodies of all those afferent nerves are located. Here's another picture of it all blown up and big. So we have the afferent nerve here coming in, cell body on a stalk, axon continues in and goes into the spinal cord. What do you think lies at this end down here, this end of the neuron? Okay, it's your dendrite-like process, but what do you think is at the very distal tip of it? Receptors. So depending on what kind of afferent neuron will depend on what kind of receptor. If it's the one that picks up pain and temperature, what kind of receptor would that be? It's a sensory receptor, but give me a name. Free nerve ending. These are the things I want you to learn, okay? Free nerve ending. So we could have a free nerve ending, remember that looked like a branch, out there in the skin, picks up a sensation, causes a depolarization. Oh, what comes in? What chemical?
Sodium.
The sodium ion floods in. It gets to the threshold stimulus. What's that number? Negative 55. We have an action potential. It's so exciting. It comes up that dendrite-like process, continues on the axon all the way into the spinal cord. And when we get in here, you'll see that it's going to synapse onto another neuron and the information will go up to the brain. Hang on, we'll get there. Ventral root. That's the other of the two roots that come together to make the spinal nerve. Got the dorsal root, which is sensory. So what do you think the ventral root is?
Motor.
Okay, now we got the motor root. So in this case, which direction would the action potential be going?
Out.
So in this case, we're going to have a cell body with the dendrites. The axon will come out the ventral root and go to what? To a muscle or a gland. Great. Or you could have said another neuron, but that's the wrong answer, and you'll know that better in about an hour. Okay, so it's going to go out to the muscle or a gland. Great, so we have dorsal root bringing all the sensory information in, the ventral root taking all the motor information out. At some point, they join together, and what is that called where they join? No. Right here, where the dorsal root and the ventral root come together, structurally, we're just going to call it the spinal nerve, not synapse. They don't actually synapse on each other, meaning send their neurotransmitter from one to another. The neurons are just going to run together like a highway. Two ramps come together, now all the cars are running together, right? That's what happens here at the spinal nerve. So a spinal nerve is that union of the two roots. And this is what you see coming out of the intervertebral foramen. I left this model up here to show you. So in your spine, your bones, you have holes, intervertebral foramen. What's coming out of that is your spinal nerve. What you can't see deep in there, and this model doesn't even show it, is that before that spinal nerve, closer to the spinal cord, what you have is dorsal and ventral roots that join together to make the spinal nerve. Any questions? This model shows it as well. We got the spinal cord in the center, dorsal and ventral root, and spinal nerve coming off it. Don't worry about the little prongy things, okay? Oops, upside down. What would you call this swelling? And what's inside the dorsal root ganglion? Cell bodies of what kind of nerve? Afferent or afferent nerve. Great. Wonderful. That's where you need to be with me at this point in the class, okay? Yes? You can. It's not a very common thing. More likely, it gets damaged. If you're having a lot of pain, can't get rid of it with medications, nothing's helping, nothing at all. One of the last step type things you can do is get a root cut. Which root would you cut if you're having a lot of pain and you want to get rid of pain? Dorsal, because that's bringing the pain in. So they cut the dorsal root, pain's relieved, right? Along with other things, you can't feel anything from that spinal section. No. Unfortunately, I'm teaching you the basic neuro. What they found, some sensory comes in the ventral root. And when they do this, initially patients get a pain relief, but then since there are some sensory coming in the ventral root, they start to get really strong. And next thing you know, the patient has pain, but they've had a dorsal rootectomy, and they're not getting sensation of discriminative touch and all the other wonderful things that they wanted from that spinal section. They don't do this surgery all that much anymore. Okay? It's still being done, but very, very rarely. It's really a last resort type thing for chronic pain. Alrighty, spinal nerves. You know that they are the union of the dorsal and ventral root, but how are these buggers named? It's not as simple as it should be. Really isn't. You have 31 pairs of spinal nerves, so it would be kind of nice if they were 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way down to 31. They're not. They're named according to their region, cervical, thoracic, lumbar, sacral. How many cervical bones do you have?
8, 7.
I know why you said 8, though, because you have 8 cervical nerves. So now we got another problem. They're not named according to the bone. They're named kind of according to the bone, with the exception of C8. C8's the abnormality. There is no C8 vertebrae, but there is a C8 nerve. So how do you do this? In the cervical region, the nerve exits on top of the vertebrae it's named after. Okay, so you have your C1 bone. Bone will be like this. Nerve C1 comes out right above C1 bone. So the next bone down would be C2, right? So what nerve comes out between C1 and C2? C2. And it keeps going like that. You get to C7 and T1. What nerve comes out between them?
C8.
That's the weird one. C8. So everything changes once you get to T1. After T1, they come out under the bone they're named by. So under T1 is where T1 nerve comes out. And so on. You got to look at the picture. You got to think about it. I could stand up here and say it a million times, but until you actually go, aha, it doesn't matter what I say. I've kind of learned that over the years. You've got to look at the picture and figure it out. Just remember, though, C8 is the abnormality. When you get to the spine class, if you tell Commander Rigsby that there's a C8 vertebrae, you're going to be making a fool of yourself. Okay, so don't do it. There's a C8 nerve, not a C8 vertebrae. And now we go to tracts. My favorite portion of the entire class of spinal cord. You know I have favorites everywhere. This is my spinal cord favorite. This is fun. It is all about hopping on one neuron and going to the next. It's like taking buses. So if you like to figure out what's the best route to get downtown, this is for you, this part of the class. All right? We're going to talk about tracts. Total fun. Looking at the cross section, I already told you that you can map out different areas where there's axons running with the same function. Same function. They all run together. They have the same function. Pain temperature or vibration, proprioception, and discriminative touch. They all run together. Now we're going to talk about how we get from receptor to brain or from brain to muscle. We're going to connect the nerves. How many does it take? And where do they cross? Where do they synapse? That's the idea here. We're going to be looking at three different pathways, two sensory and one motor. Looking at the sensory pathways, I'm going to get started and then we're going to break, okay? So hang in there with me a bit. Oh, we just got off a break. Yeah, 35 minutes ago. Seems like a minute ago. Yeah, we're going to get through at least one track. Looking at the sensory tracks, they're pretty similar as far as their general organization. The two we're going to look at are the anterior lateral spinal thalamic tract and the posterior or dorsal columns. Now, you may think that first one, the name, is overwhelming. Anterior lateral spinal thalamic tract. Folks, it's not. It's actually a good thing because it tells you exactly where you're going. Exactly. We are going from the spine to the thalamus. If you're going from the spine to the thalamus, which direction neurologically are we going? Are we going superior or inferior?
Superior.
If you're taking information superiorly, is it going to be sensory or motor?
Sensory.
So just by looking at the name, you can tell if it's a sensory tract or a motor tract. It tells you you're going superior. It tells you you're going in that direction, which is the way sensory goes. It also gives you a hint as to, you know, what structures you're going to be going through. Now, this one doesn't give you a whole lot of hints. Some tracks give you more. It tells you you're going through the spine. I think you could have said no duh there. But it tells you you're going to the thalamus. So in answering any test questions or in mapping it out, which we're going to do later, if you don't go into the thalamus with this track, you're wrong. Okay? This is the track that goes to the thalamus. All right? So the names are good. Now, what about anterior lateral? That's telling you where in the spinal cord it runs. What white matter? It runs in the anterior column as well as the lateral column. You have similar tracks in both those columns. They run in the same sort of way, only one runs up the lateral column, one runs up the anterior column. Now, this track is this sensory track for pain, temperature, and crude touch. I have deep pressure. Crude touch is how I explained it before when I talked about the lateral column and the anterior column, so I'll keep on the same terms here. Pain, temperature, and crude touch. The other one, the posterior dorsal column, that runs in the posterior or dorsal column of white matter, so it has the same exact function as that column. We already learned that. Discriminative touch, proprioception, and vibration. Now, both of these pathways, I said they're kind of structurally the same. What I meant by that is they take three neurons to get from receptor to cerebrum. Three neurons. And instead of just calling them neuron 1, 2, and 3, we're going to sound extremely professional and call them the first order neuron, the second order neuron, and the third order neuron. That's just the Nora way of saying it. So I didn't make that up, okay? The first order neuron is going to be the one with the receptor. It's going to go from the receptor to the spinal cord. The second order neuron is going to go from the spinal cord to the thalamus. And then the third is going to go from where to where? Thalamus to the cerebrum. Okay? So that's the way we're going to go. Now, specifically, in the cerebrum, there is one lobe that is sensory-oriented. Which lobe was that? Ooh, short-term memory. It's not the frontal. Not the occipital. Parietal. Parietal lobe, your sensory lobe. So when we end that third-order neuron, we're going to end in the parietal lobe. Specifically, what gyrus of the parietal lobe had that organized strip of sensations? It's up there. Post-central gyrus. So that's where we're going to end up for both of these tracks. We're going to start at a receptor, And in three neurons, we're going to get to the postcentral gyrus. Are you excited? Are you ready? No? I don't know if I'm ready either. I want to make sure I do it good. Okay. Anterior spinal thalamic tract. We're going to start with that first order neuron. And it starts way out here in the periphery. I got to get red going here. Here's your receptor. Right here. Listen to me first. We're going to do it a couple times, okay? But just listen to me and watch the slide. So it starts out in the periphery with the receptor on its dendrite-like process. This is a unipolar neuron. That process goes up. We're in the spinal nerve right now, going through the dorsal root. Cell bodies located in the dorsal root ganglion for this first order neuron, afferent neuron. The axon-like process comes into the spinal cord and synapses. Now notice there's a lot of synapses going on in here. I'm concerned about this synapse right here because it's going to synapse onto the second order neuron here. Now, let me show you a little trick about diagramming. Anytime in neurophysiology when we diagram a synapse, it's going to look like this. A Y and then a ball with an axon. The Y is your axon terminal. The ball is your cell body / dendrites. Never do they draw dendrites. I guess they're just not worth the energy, okay? So when you see that Y and then the ball, that's a synapse. Synapse, we have the neurotransmitter going into the synaptic cleft, going over to the receptors of the postsynaptic terminal, causing a depolarization of that neuron if the stimulus gets up to negative 55 millivolts, action potential of the next neuron. Okay, so now let's go back to the diagram down here. Let me erase. I drew a blue doll. You can see that. The blue ball would be the cell body of the second order neuron. Look what this bugger does. It doesn't just go up the spinal cord, it switches to the other side of the spinal cord. It goes collateral, crosses over, and then it ascends. Now it can either ascend in the lateral portion, which would be this part of the white matter, or the anterior portion. I'm not going to get specific on that. But it ascends in one of the two. And it goes up the spinal cord, past the medulla oblongata, or I should say through the pons, through the midbrain, all the way up into this egg-like structure called the what?
Thalamus.
You got it. In the thalamus, it's going to synapse onto the third order neuron. So now we get neuron number 3. Dendrite cell body right there, synapse occurred. The axon of this one goes into the internal capsule, which was that mass of white matter that takes all axons in and out of the cerebrum. So it's kind of like the entryway into the cerebrum. And it's going to go up to the parietal lobe, specifically the postcentral gyrus, and terminate there onto some interneurons or some other neurons to process the information. Now, as far as the tract's concerned, we're not worried about it. Once it gets up to that postcentral gyrus, that's the end of the tract. The processing that occurs there, we're not going to get into that. What I want you to know are those three neurons. And the best way to learn this is to know where the cell body is, where it crosses, and where it synapses. You know those three things, and you'll be able to tell me the tract. Cell body, crosses, synapses. Okay? All right, so here we go again, folks. We're on the anterior lateral spinal thalamic tract. So is it motor or sensory?
Sensory.
Sensory. You know that because we're going spine to thalamus, spinal thalamic. That's the direction. It's going superior, which means it's sensory, taking information in. And we have how many neurons getting us from receptor to cerebrum?
Three.
And they're called order neurons. Three order neurons. And now our job is to map it out. So following what you have in your handout, and I have to beg forgiveness because I made corrections in my handouts, but they didn't make it into the print. So in other words, I'm going to have you cross a few things out. I changed handouts, and I updated it, but I left out a couple things. So I'm going to have you cross some things out. So looking at this handout here, upper motor neuron. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong one. I went ahead. Looking at the handout on anterior spinal thalamic tract, three neuron pathway. Page 7, maybe? Anterior, yeah, I'm on the book. Not on the little things I gave out to you yet. We're not there yet, folks. In the actual handout, anterior spinal thalamic tract. Now I want to tell you the tract while you're looking at the words. Okay? So we'll start out with the first order neuron. It's an afferent neuron. It's a peripheral nerve. It's an afferent neuron. It's out here in the periphery. You have a receptor. And that receptor is a free nerve ending because what we're picking up is pain and temperature. Okay? Free nerve ending. The other part of it is crude touch. I realize that's not in your handout. Don't let that be a problem. So it's free nerve endings picking it up. This dendrite-like process. I have just dendrite in your handout, but remember it's a dendrite-like process. Brings that sensory information in. The cell body is located where? Dorsal root ganglion. So now's where we're on the picture. On this picture, there is no receptor. But if I drew the neuron out and we were in the periphery, this is where the receptor would be, in the periphery. Okay, that would be your free nerve ending. So now we're on the actual diagram. The cell bodies of this first order neuron are located in that dorsal root, specifically the dorsal root ganglion. That's what the ganglion is, a swelling of cell bodies. That neuron continues with its axon-like process and goes into the spinal cord. It's going to synapse right away. Right after it gets in there, it's going to synapse. And it's going to synapse onto another sensory neuron. We're not going to call it afferent anymore because now it's not in the peripheral nervous system. It's in the spinal cord. It's in the central. So it's just a sensory neuron. We don't actually give a name to it. On your handout, it says internuchial neuron. When I adjusted things, I took that term out, so you don't even know what that means. So you can just cross it out. Okay? Some textbooks refer to internuchial. Some prefer to projection. We're just going to cross out internuchial. Don't worry about that. And know that it's going to synapse onto another neuron, which is going to carry sensory information. Now, where does it synapse? Let's go back to the horny butterfly. You had three horns, dorsal horn, lateral horn, and anterior horn. Two of them were motor, one was sensory. Do you remember which one was sensory? The dorsal horn. So that's where the cell body and dendrites of the second order neuron is going to be located, in the dorsal horn. So that's where the synapse occurs, right there. So if you look carefully on the diagram, and you have this picture in your handout as well, you'll see the blue neuron, which is your first order neuron, synapsing onto the red neuron, which is your second order neuron. And the synapse is occurring at the dorsal root, the dorsal horn. Horn, horny butterfly. Okay, so we're in the second order neuron now. You know where that cell body is located, dorsal horn. The axon of that neuron is going to cross over right away to the contralateral side or the other side of the spinal cord. It crosses right away. And then it will ascend to the brain in either the anterior column or the lateral column. That's why in this picture you see two neurons. One's anterior and one's lateral. They're pretty much doing the same exact thing, only they travel in a different column. They used to think they were two separate things. They've decided they're not anymore. Okay, so same function, two different columns. They go up in this diagram. You'll see it goes up through the medulla. That's this cross section here. Then it goes up through the midbrain. What did we skip? What's in between the two? Pons. And it does go through the pons too. It's just not diagrammed, okay? But it would be there. Continues to ascend until it gets to the thalamus, which is that red egg-like structure. That's where the second order neuron ends. It's going to synapse onto the third order neuron. So the cell body dendrites of that third order neuron are right there in the thalamus. They pick up the neurotransmitter, continue the pathway, and they enter the cerebrum via that internal capsule. That's how all neurons enter or exit the cerebrum. And they terminate in the parietal lobe, specifically the postcentral gyrus of the parietal lobe. Three neurons get you there. It's like taking three buses. This is all laid out in your body. It's already set there. All you need to get the pathway to work is an action potential, depolarization. And it all starts at the receptor. Receptor causes the depolarization. That electrical activity of the depolarization goes through the first order neuron, second order neuron, third order neuron. And your brain senses it. Just three. Isn't that amazing? It just takes three neurons. All right. Now on your paper, what you have is a very crude drawing. This is the one I handed out, of a spinal cord section with the dorsal and ventral root. You can see where they come together to make a spinal nerve. Don't worry about where they split, okay, after they come together. Don't worry about that. What I want you to do is using three different colors if possible. So you might have to share markers or highlighters. Try to map it out. Use your notes to help you with this, okay? Don't expect to do it totally by memory. But the key things you got to have is, where are the cell bodies? Where does it cross over? You got those two things and you're going to be fine, because the other thing to know is where the synapsing is. And the synapsing occurs where the cell bodies occur. So, give it a shot. I'll give you a couple minutes here. All right, so you've all been tracking your anterior lateral spinal thalamic tract. Question?
The second order neuron, why does it start in the gray matter with the first order neuron? Because it doesn't, it seems like it shouldn't connect.
All right.
It should just start in the white matter.
It shouldn't, because what is white matter? Axons. What is gray matter?
Cell body.
Cell body and dendrites. And it's going to synapse onto the cell body and dendrites. So you need your second order neuron cell body to be in the gray matter, because that's what gray matter is. So let me work through this. Let me erase what I got on here first. There's several diagrams that you can use to do these. This is just one of many. I like it for a couple reasons. It's an anterior lateral spinal thalamic tract. So it can run up the anterior and the lateral columns of the white matter in the spinal cord. This one shows it doing both. So it has one tract going anterior, one tract going lateral. So that's why you see two red neurons in here. So we'll start out with the first order neuron. For me, the easiest thing to do is think cell body first. Where's the cell body of the first order neuron? Dorsal root ganglion. So you should all have a cell body in there. This is an afferent neuron, unipolar. So that cell body is sitting on a stalk. Okay? From there, I can backtrack and go distally to the receptor, free nerve ending. And going proximally, I have the axon part coming into the spinal cord. It doesn't come in far. It just comes in the dorsal root and then immediately goes to a synapse. The synapse is going to be on the second order neurons, cell body and dendrites, so it's going to synapse actually in the dorsal horn, in the gray matter. It's not, that little bit of an axon coming in is not going to change the gray matter to be white. Okay, it's going to keep it gray because those cell bodies have a lot of mass. They take up a lot of space, they keep it gray. So the actual synapse, if I blow it up here, This is my butterfly. Oh, it's awful. Okay, very unsymmetrical. But here we have dorsal root ganglion. There's the cell body of the first order neuron. Axons coming in to the actual spinal cord. The synapse onto the second order neuron is going to be in that dorsal horn. Remember, drawing synapses, if you want to do it like the neurophys people, you do the Y for the axon terminal and the ball symbolizing the cell body and dendrites of the next neuron. That's a synapse. So the axon of the second order neuron is going to cross over and go to the lateral, or I'm just going to draw another one here, go anterior, which I don't have much anterior white matter, but if I did, it would go there. So it's going to go out of the gray matter. The actual pathway it takes to get out of there, and we're not going to get into that detail. I just want you to know it goes out of the gray matter, crossing over to the other side of the spinal cord, and then from there, it's going to ascend the spinal cord. So if we're up in the cervical region, it doesn't have far to ascend. If we're down in the thoracic or lumbar region, it's going to have a lot more spinal cord to ascend up. So looking on the diagram that's already drawn for you, this is the red neuron. And there's two of them. One of them's going up the lateral track, and one of them's going up the anterior track, but they're both doing the exact same thing, just traveling in different parts of white matter. That's all. So the first thing they pass through is the medulla. Do they synapse there? No, just passing through. Second thing they pass through, it's not there, it would be the pons. Do they synapse in the pons? No. Synapse in the midbrain? No. Continue to go up. It's up here in the thalamus that you see the synapsing occurring. And it's hard to see because they have red on red. But you would have the second order neuron terminating, and the third order neuron takes this the impulse. The synapse occurs onto that. So up there in the thalamus. Now I noticed it's all staying on the same side now. We crossed over in the spinal cord, but make sure it stays on the same side. Don't switch to the opposite thalamus. Stay on that same side. Now, in my diagram, I did a really poor job of doing the internal capsule. I have it kind of down here. The internal capsule continues all the way up. That's what those lines are. So that third order neuron, cell body is located in the thalamus. The axon enters the cerebrum via the internal capsule and goes up into the cerebrum, which lobe? Parietal, your sensory lobe. Which gyrus specifically? Postcentral gyrus, and that's where it ends up. So if you can think cell bodies, we got three neurons. Where are those three cell bodies? Dorsal root ganglion, dorsal horn, thalamus. That's going to help you out. If you know where the synapses are, and when we have three neurons, how many synapses should there be? Not really. Two, because we're not worried about what happens when it gets into the cortex. Okay, so two synapses. We have one down here in the dorsal horn, one in the thalamus. And if you know where it crosses over, and where does it cross? Spinal cord, right after it enters. You can do the track. Those are the key things. When you quiz each other, those are the questions you need to ask. All right? Plus, I'll give you another copy of this that you can work on it at home, too, for your fun and enjoyment. Okay, so that's testable track number one, anterior lateral spinal thalamic track. Now you get to sit back and relax a little bit. Oh, wait, clinical disorders. Must tell the clinical disorders. If you have brain damage, and it destroys, it destroys right here. Where are you going to have sensory loss in your body? Yeah, opposite side, because I don't know what we're looking at here. Opposite side. So your CVA patients that get brain damage because of a blood leak or a clot, their sensory disruption will be on the contralateral or opposite side of the body. What if you have a laceration in the arm? Where's the sensory damage? same side. Okay, that's kind of obvious, right? But I just want to kind of bring home the point that this crosses over at some point. So if you know the track and you know where it crosses over, you'll be able to determine where the sensory loss will be according to the injury. Where it gets tricky is if you have a spinal cord injury at this level. Yikes. Is it going to be on the same side as, or the opposite side, or both? At that time, you really have to look at the spinal cord injury MRIs to really determine what's going to happen there. And a lot of it's just clinically. You just look to see how the patient goes. But pretty much you know from the level that it enters up, if there's an injury, it's going to be contralateral. But before it enters the spinal cord, if there's an injury, it's going to be on the same side, which is ipsilateral. All right? So don't let that bother you too much if that's causing you, you know, major brain problems right now. The important part is the track. So let's get to the one that you just get to sit back and enjoy. Oh, once again, here I am. I'm jumping the gun. There's another clinical disorder I want to talk about. Briefly, though, phantom pain, phantom sensation. You're going to hear more of this when we do amputation classes towards the end of the course. This is weird, folks. You have an amputation patient. They no longer have a right foot, but they are telling you that their right toe is killing them. Pain sensations from the right toe. They don't have a right toe. What in the world is going on? There's a couple theories out there. The old theory, the one I learned in 1990 when I sat in your seats, was that where the amputation site is, be it, you know, knee, lower leg, wherever, the nerves are bundling up, causing neuromas. And because of that, they're sending sensation of pain that would be coming from that nerve in the toe. They're sending it up to the brain, and the brain's still saying the toe's there. Old theory. Some people still go by it, because the new theory hasn't been proven 101%. What the new theory is we have a track, and the track ends in the parietal lobe, postcentral gyrus. Well, there's no longer any sensory information coming from the right toe going to that part of the postcentral gyrus. Remember, it's all mapped out? So what's happening is the neighboring part of that of the postcentral gyrus is sharing, is giving it some of its stimulus. So maybe the neighboring part is the knee or the medial thigh. Well, now the sensations coming from the knee aren't just going to the parietal lobe precentral gyrus for the knee. They're branching out and sending some information to where the toe gets processed. The brain interprets it as information from the toe. It's not from the toe, but that's how the brain interprets it. So that's a new theory coming out, and there's been research on that too. So when you see amputation patients, and you're going to have clinicals down at our Center for the Intrepid, and you will talk with amputation patients and ask them, do you ever have sensation from your amputated limb? Find out about it. It's very, very interesting. Yes. Yeah, it's weird. Sometimes it collaterals and doesn't go to the knee anymore. It just goes to where the toe is. Or sometimes it does both. In the hand, one example of it, and this is your sensory homunculus showing the mapping of the postcentral gyrus. In the hand, look how close the hand is to the face. These patients will complain of hand pain of their amputated hand. When you touch their cheek, it brings on hand pain. So in that case, it actually split. It's going to both. But what they're feeling, they're not sensing the cheek. They're sensing the pain in the hand. Just bizarre. I mean, the whole thing is pretty bizarre. And because of this new theory, they're changing the way they treat this to address the neuro, it's called plasticity, the changes in the neurons. Yes?
Is that permanent?
Permanent enough. Takes a real long time for the brain to figure it out. And it can be very, very painful. Yes?
Are there any studies on like virtual? So like person that's in their foot or something like that, or cramping up a hand that they've had that it was amputated, that it actually, that they were doing some virtual with obviously working with the mind on the patient opening up his hand and then losing and then the sensation coming back.
This what this guy is doing. Right now it's all case studies, so the experiments on it are one by one basis, so they can't make a lot of judgment on that. But this whole book, not the whole book, but a lot of it's on just that. And we can talk later on that, but I need to move on. This is a great book. This guy writes for you and me, not for neuroscientists. All right, the second one. I just want you to see this one to have an idea that all tracks are not created the same, but they do have similarities. What you need to know for this, for the test, is the function of this track. That is testable. I won't have you map it out, but you need to know the function, which is really, really simple because it's the same exact function of the white matter of the posterior or the dorsal column. And it's called the posterior dorsal column track. Okay, so this is the white matter, the axons that run through that white matter, what they functionally do. So please, don't think that this whole track is not testable. The function of this track is testable. What's not testable is how it maps up. But we're looking at three-order neurons again. It's sensory, three-order neurons. Starting from the periphery, the first-order neuron looks the same from the beginning. Coming in, we got the unipolar neuron, comes in, but here's the difference. Instead of synapsing right away like the last one did, this one runs in the posterior column all the way up to the medulla, and it synapses there onto the second-order neuron. Then it crosses, and then it runs up to the thalamus, because all sensory goes to the thalamus, right? Synapses under third-order neuron and goes to the parietal lobe, postcentral gyrus. So what I want to show you, and the reason I bring this up is not to add confusion, but to show you that there's a lot of variability in these tracks, but they have some basic things the same. In this case, sensory, three-order neurons, all go to the thalamus, okay, and they cross. Almost all tracks cross, not all do. But here's the next one you need to know. Your motor pathway. Lateral corticospinal tract. Just like the other tract told you where you're going, so does this one. It's going from the cortex, cerebral cortex, to the spine. So now you're going down. And in going down, it's functionally motor. What part of the spinal cord, white matter, do you think it's going to run in? No, it's going to run in the white matter, but are we in the anterior part of the spinal column, the lateral, or the posterior? Look at the name. Lateral. Okay, the name tells you a lot. So it tells you the function just by giving you the direction of its flow, cortical, spinal. And it tells you where in the spinal cord it runs, lateral. And that would be your white matter, the axon running. Now, the motor tracks are different than the sensory tracks. Sensory had three-order neurons. Motor has two. Easier to learn, right? Just two neurons. Two neurons. And just like we had the funky way of saying it, order neuron with the sensory, in the motor, you call it an upper motor neuron, and a lower motor neuron. They're not numbered. The upper one is located more superiorly, so it's going from brain to spinal cord. The lower one goes from spinal cord to periphery. So let's get into it. Why don't we? I'm going to pull up the picture. You can follow along with the words. This one, motor, we're going to start in the brain. What lobe of the brain would you start if you're thinking motor? Don't say parietal. Frontal. Frontal is your motor lobe. Okay, so we are now in the frontal lobe. What particular gyrus of the frontal lobe do you think I want to start in here? Precentral. Good, it doesn't have the S in it. Precentral gyrus. So that's where the cell body is located. The axon of that cell body is going to leave the cerebrum via the internal capsule. That was the name of the main highway that leaves. Go down through the brainstem. And at the level of the medulla oblongata, it will cross. It says it right there. Desiccation is the fancy word for cross. Crosses in the medulla. Then it will travel down the lateral column of the spinal cord until it gets to the level where it's going to exit. At that point, the axon will deviate into the gray matter so it can synapse on the cell body dendrites of the lower motor neuron. Now we got the horny butterfly. You know the dorsal horn is sensory. We're in the ventral horn, motor, somatic voluntary motor. That's the track we're doing. The cell body's located in the ventral horn. It goes out the ventral root because that's the root carrying motor, spinal nerve, and it goes to the muscle, skeletal muscle. That's a lot easier, isn't it? Say yes. Come on, make me feel good here. All right, two neurons, upper motor neuron, lower motor neuron. First thing you want to think of is where the cell body is located of those two neurons. One is precentral gyrus, frontal lobe of the cerebral cortex. The second one, which horn? Ventral, or you could say anterior, horn of the spinal cord. So that's the first thing to identify, where are the cell bodies? The second thing to identify is where does it cross? Where does it cross? Medulla oblongata. And which neuron's crossing, the upper or the lower?
Upper.
The upper's crossing in the medulla. And that's it. There's only one synapse here, and the one synapse is in the ventral horn. Hoo-hoo-hoo, I'm out of time. Clinical disorders, mess it up, you get motor loss. We'll talk more about that later, okay?